Welcome to KHD Bible Study Podcast. My name is Reb Emanuel. I'm a teacher and an elder at Kehilat HaDerech Messianic Synagogue in New York City. Each week, I lead a detailed study from a Messianic Jewish perspective into the Holy Scriptures, chapter by chapter, adding historical context to the events, people, and places. Each week, passionate people gather to read the scriptures, discuss the significance, and ask questions that help to bring out a deeper understanding of the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. Open up your Tanakhs or your Holy Bibles and join us as we explore the books of Ezra and Nehemiah. Yes. Esther occurs simultaneously to the Ezra-Nehemiah era. In many ways, the events in Shushan and the events in Persia set up the events that take place after her in the new Persian Yehudi province, which we will later call Judea. All right, the books of Ezra and Nehemiah mark a major turning point in the Torah. The children of Israel came out of Egypt and emerged from the desert as a nation, a single nation, still divided along tribal lines, but a people with a shared origin story. The legacies of their patriarchs was well known to every man, woman, and child because life was tied to a single Torah, a single book, and to a single message. The monarchy of King David had forged the separate tribes into a single nation for the very first time. After his son Solomon, the king, the kingdom became two distinct nations, Israel in the north and Judah in the south. This is going to cause a problem. Israel, with its capital in Samaria, immediately fell into idolatry, worshiping a golden calf. Judah's capital, on the other hand, is the most famous city on earth, Jerusalem. Jerusalem alone, of all the cities of earth, goes back to the ancient world ruled by Egypt, survived the rise and fall of Persia, Greece, Rome, the Ottoman Empire, the kingdoms of Europe, and it's destined to be the capital of the kingdom of Elohim, the kingdom of God. Yes, it will be administered from Jerusalem here on earth, not in heaven, as we've learned from the prophets. Since the days of Solomon, the God of Israel pleaded with his people to return to the worship instituted by Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. Sometimes a ruler would listen to God's messengers, his prophets, but still the people became further and further distant from their creator. And if you read the parsha this week, then you know that Adonai, that our God, called it way back before they even crossed the Jordan. The exact words that he uses parallels what happens to the nation. So God brought powerful foreign nations against his own people, and he selected a remnant for himself from the people, and the rest fell to captivity, enslavement, and death. Ezra and Nehemiah is the story of the southern kingdom tribes, Judah, Levi, and Benjamin, as they leave captivity in Persia and as they try to reestablish their lives in the new Persian province of Yehudi, which, as I said, later on will be called Judea. Ezra is sometimes called a scribe and sometimes called a priest, but they're the same person. Some external sources claim that he was hired by the Persian kings to translate Hebrew writings into Chaldean, the ancient Persian language. The scripture kind of bears it out. He has the ability to walk into the court of the king and to talk to him. Ezra was the son of Seraiah, the last high priest to serve in the first temple, and a relative of Joshua, which we will learn later on. By this time, that name Joshua has evolved into the name Yeshua. The first high priest of the second temple, his name was Yeshua. I know that sounds Interesting. This makes Ezra a descendant of Zadok, Pinhas, and Eleazar, son of Aaron. That was a big surprise to me when I looked at his lineage and I looked backwards and I realized that Ezra, we see, is operating under the same covenant of shalom given to Pinhas. According to Torah, Ezra was not a high priest. Centuries later, in the Middle Ages, Maimonides, known by Rambam, and his introduction to the Mishneh Torah makes mention of a rabbinical court of Ezra called the Great Assembly. And Rambam lists several notable men, including Ezra the scribe. By the way, not Ezra the high priest, Ezra the scribe. This has led to centuries of debate as to whether Ezra was ever a high priest. The biblical text is clear that Ezra was not a high priest. His relative Yeshua was. However, he was highly influential in the redevelopment of Torah faith after exile to Babylon. He pulled the people together and he started them on the path. Ezra did not return with the first wave of returnees to Jerusalem, but he came only after the temple was rebuilt. Pay attention. I said the temple was rebuilt because the truth is when the people returned, they had a hard time getting started with the work, which we saw at the end of the prophets. They built the temple, but they did not build the wall to protect Jerusalem. We'll come to that later. In Jewish tradition, Ezra is considered the author of the Book of Chronicles and separately the books of Ezra and Nehemiah, which, by the way, up until the Middle Ages were one book. It was just simply Ezra and Nehemiah, of course, in Hebrew. It was literally one book. This book was divided in the Middle Ages in Christian Bibles, and the practice was adopted in modern times by Jewish printed Bibles. But there is no doubt that Ezra wrote Chronicles. I'm going to give you some examples to prove this. The last two verses of Ezra, I'm sorry, the last two verses of Chronicles reads as follows. This is verse 22 and 23, the last two verses of Chronicles. Verse 22, Second Chronicles. The last two verses of Second Chronicles 22. I realize also that Chronicles, just like Ezra and Nehemiah, was actually originally one book, but we divided it in two. Now, in the first year of King Cyrus of Persia, fulfilling the word of Adonai by the mouth of Jeremiah, Adonai stirred up the spirit of King Cyrus of Persia so that he sent a proclamation throughout all his kingdom and also put it in writing, saying, verse 23, thus says King Cyrus of Persia, Adonai, the God of heaven, has given me all the kingdoms of the earth. He has appointed me to build him a house in Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Whoever among you, of all his people, may go up and may Adonai his God be with him. Those are the last two verses of the second book of Chronicles. Now, let's look at the first book of Chronicles, the first four verses of Ezra. Now, in the first year of King Cyrus of Persia, in order to accomplish the word of Adonai from the mouth of Jeremiah, Adonai stirred up the spirit of King Cyrus of Persia to make a proclamation throughout his entire kingdom, announcing in a written edict saying, verse 2, thus says King Cyrus of Persia, Adonai, the God of heaven, has given me all the kingdoms of earth. He has appointed me to build a house for him in Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Whoever's among you from all his people, may his God be with him, may go up to Jerusalem, which is in Judah, and build the house of Adonai, the God of Israel. He is the God who is in Jerusalem. As for anyone who stays, wherever they may be living, let the people of those places supply him with silver and gold, with goods and livestock, and with free will offerings for the house of God in Jerusalem. So as you can tell, the last two verses of the second book of Chronicles mirror exactly the first few verses of Ezra. This is the same author. The book of Ezra combines events from both inside Persia and in New Judea, reporting events leading to the reestablishment of the people of Judah in the Promised Land. These books, while a lot of people don't read them, a lot of people do not read these books. They serve as an archway, a doorway from our modern period into the distant past. On the one hand, we are going to see a new identity emerge that exactly mirrors what God previously revealed in the books of the prophets. Many people struggle with the books of the prophets because God is talking about two separate houses. What is that about? Well, the books of Ezra and Nehemiah actually begin a new identity for the second house, the house of Judah. In other words, this is officially the beginning of the Jewish people. In the books of the prophets, there are two distinct houses. Joseph was the northern 12 tribes. I'm sorry, the northern 10 tribes who were lost. And Judah held fast to the teachings, the Torah scrolls, and the word of God. And they emerged from captivity to reestablish Jerusalem. Just as, to remind you of this, modern day House of Judah has reemerged from near annihilation in Europe to once again establish Jerusalem on the exact same mountain that Abraham took his son. There is enormous continuity from Abraham to the present day. It's undeniable. Where once the ancient world saw and forged on stone the name of the unified kingdom of David, and they called them the House of David, the children of Israel became divided after the Assyrian and Babylonian captivity. So we now have the 10 northern tribes who were lost to history. The mixed southern tribes make up Judah, Benjamin, and Levi, and an assortment of others. And they would become known forever as Judeans or Yehudi, or as we call them today, the Jews. The first time this identification of the southern tribes as Jews is seen in the Tanakh in two places, most unexpectedly. 2 Kings 16:6 and 2 Kings 25:25. They are our brief references to the descendants of the southern kingdom of Judah. It is in the time of Esther, under King Artaxerxes, that the phrase comes to be associated with the only people who still hold fast to Torah traditions and history. In Esther's time, no one knows what happened to the northern tribes. They simply disappeared. As a matter of fact, when the people returned from captivity in Persia, the people who replaced them are there in the Holy Land, and they want to form alliances with the people that are returning. When we look backwards through history and we see all those who hold fast to the Torah, it has become customary to call Torah keepers Jews. So in a sense, even though originally they were called the children of Israel and they were cut off, some of the people remained held fast to the Torah, to the safer scrolls, and they became known as we know them today as the Jews. But that was predicted. Long time ago, Jacob, this promised, prophesied that the scepter of rulership would remain with Judah. And it was the kings of Judah who were imprisoned. And we don't talk about this much, but we should. They were released by Babylon, and the holy articles of the destroyed temple were passed on to the surviving children of King David, a fact known to the Jewish community, but lost to most Christians and many others. David's grandchildren, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say grandchildren because it was a few generations. David's descendants received the holy articles from Babylon and took them back to Jerusalem when they began to rebuild the second temple. Now, there's something we need to talk about. In Greek, in the Greek Septuagint, and in the Latin Vulgate, Ezra is known as Esdras. Esdras. There's a bit of confusion between the Greek and Latin and the Hebrew. The Greeks and Latins have added books and they've changed details. First Edris, or Edris A, depending on which version you look at, closely parallels Ezra Nehemiah, focusing on Ezra and removing Nehemiah, and includes extra material. Now, keep in mind, such additions are common in early Greco-Latin Christian texts, as we saw with the addition of the chapters of Bel and the Dragon in the story of Daniel. Those were just additions that the Greeks and Romans, the Greeks in particular, thought would be fascinating. So they added it to the book of Daniel. To Esdras, or sometimes called Esdras 4, also called Latin Esdras, is an apocalyptic book added after the fact to the story of Ezra. We are only concerned in this series with the Jewish and Hebrew versions of Ezra and Nehemiah as they appear in the Holy Scriptures. We will not be going into Greek legends and fantasies and all of those other things that they add to the Torah. Ezra, the scribe, had access to the sacred Torahs. He had access to the books from the temple, the historical books and the books of Samuel, which included the books of Kings. As mentioned earlier, Ezra was a descendant of Aaron the priest and Pinhas, who was given a covenant of shalom. And as we know from the Torah, he would have been born into priestly service. Babylon and Persia. We have to understand how these cultures function. Babylon and Persia did not destroy languages or peoples, but they integrated the youngest, the brightest, the non-combatants into their form of government. And that's why you see Daniel and his companions in the Persian government, or in the Babylonian government, and then carried over into the Persian government. Like the kings of Babylon, Persia claimed the title of King of Kings. So if you see it in the text, understand that this was a common Middle Eastern practice carried over from Babylon of calling the king who had many kings simply the King of Kings, because they literally integrated those kingdoms into their empires. Now, by contrast, Greece and Rome obliterated people. They enslaved and pressed anybody and everybody into service, the best of each kingdom. And they forced the people to speak the current version of Greek or Latin language. So if you are around Romans and Greeks, if you didn't want to get in trouble, you would speak their particular version of Greek or Latin. Greco-Romans wanted to make everyone Greek or Roman, which is going to become a problem for the Jewish people who have held fast to the Torah and to their ancestry and to their traditions. But that's for another time. So Babylonians and Persians allowed freedoms to a certain degree, and the kings of Persia greatly respected the God of Israel. And because of that, his people from Judah. Now, I need to add this off the top, not in my script. I know that over time, the Persians have gone back and redefined their history, not unlike Americans and Brits and everybody else who redefines their history. So all of a sudden, Jews became less important, although they held high offices in the time of the early Persian kings. especially after Mordecai. So they did hold offices. They had respect. Many, many shuls and schools were built in Persia. But over time, they turned against their Jewish population and they pushed many people out. Let's look at the layout of the book before we get started. The parts of the book of Ezra, there are parts of the book of Ezra, chapter 4, verse 8 through chapter 6 through 18, and chapter 7, 12 through 26. Chapter 7, verses 12 through 26 are actually written in Aramaic. The rest of the book is in Hebrew. Ezra was fluent in both Aramaic and Hebrew. For our series, we have broken the books of Ezra and Nehemiah into six episodes of parts. And everyone who is attending this class should have received a PDF breaking down, which is on the screen, breaking down the various subjects and chapters and how we will treat them going forward. We will discuss the reforms of Ezra and Nehemiah, the books collected during this period, and the first time the Tanakh canon. Yes, Ezra and his people, Ezra and Nehemiah, and the people of the, as Nehemiah called them, the Great Assembly, actually got together and they decided which books belong in the biblical canon. This is long before the Greeks made their book. So we will also discuss the Great Assembly in Jewish literature because there's two realities. There's the Great Assembly that Nehemiah talks about. And then there's the Great Assembly that is developed centuries later in the Middle Ages in the Mishneh Torah. They are similar, but the one in Nehemiah and Ezra is biblical. The one in the Mishneh Torah is kind of more like tradition. All right, so let us dig into the books. We will take them chapter by chapter, and we will begin reading Ezra chapter 1.
Ezra chapter 1. Now in the first year of King Cyrus of Persia, in order to accomplish the word of Adonai from the mouth of Jeremiah, Adonai stirred up the spirit of King Cyrus of Persia to make a proclamation throughout his entire kingdom, announcing in a written edict, saying, "Thus says King Cyrus of Persia, Adonai, the God of heaven, has given me all the kingdoms of the earth. He has appointed me to build a house for him in Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Whoever is among you from all his people, may his God be with him, may go up to Jerusalem, which is in Judah, and build the house of Adonai, the God of Israel. He is the God who is in Jerusalem. As for anyone who remains, who wherever they may be living, let the people of those places supply him with silver and gold, with goods and livestock, and with free will offerings for the house of God in Jerusalem." So the patriarchal leaders of Judah and Benjamin, along with the Kohanim and the Levites, everyone whose spirit God had stirred up, arose to go up to build the house of Adonai in Jerusalem. All those around them strengthened their hands with the vessels of silver, gold, goods, cattle, and valuable gifts, besides all that was willingly offered. Then King Cyrus brought out the vessels from the house of Adonai that Nebuchadnezzar had brought out from Jerusalem and placed in the house of his gods. King Cyrus of Persia had them brought out by Mithredath, the treasurer, who counted them out for Sheshbazzar, the prince of Judah. And this was the inventory of them: gold basins, 30 silver basins, 1,000 silver utensils, 29 gold bowls, 30 other silver bowls, 410 other vessels, 1,000. In all, there were 5,400 vessels of gold and silver. Sheshbazzar brought them along when the exiles were brought up from Babylon to Jerusalem.
Ezra chapter 2.
Here is a list of the people of the province who had been exiled, carried off to Babylon by Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, who later returned from exile and went up to Jerusalem and Yehuda, each to his own city. They went with Zerubbabel, Yeshua, Nehemiah, Sariah, Re'aleah, Mordecai, Bilshan, Mispar, Bigvai, Rechem, and Banaha. The number of men from the people of Israel, descendants of Parush, 2,172. Descendants of Shephatiah, 372. Descendants of Arach, 775. Descendants of Peshat Moab, from the descendants of Yeshua and Moab, 2,812. Descendants of Elam, 1,254. Descendants of Zatu, 945. The descendants of Zakkai, 760. Descendants of Bani, 642. Descendants of Bavali, 623. Descendants of Azgad, 1,222. Descendants of Adonikan, 666. Descendants of Bigvai, 2,056. Descendants of Aden, 454. Descendants of Ater of Yesekiah, 98. Descendants of Batzai, 323. Descendants of Yorah, 112. Descendants of Hashum, 223. Descendants of Gibar, 95. Descendants of Beit Lechem, 123. The people of Netofa, 56. The people of Anatot, 128. Descendants of Azmavet, 42. Descendants of Kerat, Aram, Kephira, and Beerot, 743. Descendants of Ramah and Geba, 621. The people of Mechmas, 122. The people of Beit El and Ai, 223. The descendants of Invo, 52. The descendants of Magbish, 156. The descendants of the other Eliam, 1,254. Descendants of Harim, 320. Descendants of Lod, Hadid, and Ono, 725. The descendants of Jericho, 345. And the descendants of Sana'a, 3,663. The Kohanim, descendants of Yediah and the house of Yeshua, 973. Descendants of Immer, 1,052. Descendants of Pashur, 1,247. Descendants of Harim, 1,017. The Levites, descendants of Yeshua and Kadmiel, of the descendants of Had of Hodaviah, 74. The singers, descendants of Asaph, 128. Descendants of the gatekeepers, descendants of Shalom, descendants of Ater, of Talmon, Akav, Hatita, and Shovai, in all 139. The temple servants, descendants of Shlomo's servants, all the temple servants and the descendants of Shlomo's servants numbered 392. The following went up from Tel Melak, Tel Harsha, Karuv, Adan, and Immer. But they could not state which father's clan they or their children belonged to, so it was not clear whether they were from Israel. And of the descendants of the Kohanim, descendants of Haviah, descendants of Hakots, and the descendants of Barzillai, and the descendants of the Kohanim, descendants of Haviah, descendants of Hakots, and the descendants of Barzillai, who took a wife from the daughters of Barzillai, the Gileadi, and was named after them. These tried to locate their genealogical records, but they weren't found. Therefore, they were considered defiled and were not allowed to serve as Kohanim. The Tirshatha told them not to eat any of the especially holy food until a Kohen appeared who can consult the Urim and Thummim. The entire assembly numbered 42,360. that including their male and female slaves, of whom there were 7,337. They also had 200 male and female singers. Their horses numbered 736, their mules 245, their camels 435, and their donkeys 6,720. Some of the heads of the father's clans, when they came to the house of Adonai in Jerusalem, made voluntary offerings for rebuilding the house of God on its site. According to their means, they gave into the treasury for the work of 61,000 gold darkmonium, about 2/3 of a ton, 5,000 menum of silver, just over 3 tons, and 100 tunics for the Kohanim. So the Kohanim, the Leviim, some of the people, the singers, the gatekeepers, and the temple servants lived in their towns, and all Israel in their town.
When the seventh month arrived and the sons of Israel were settled in the towns, the people gathered together as one man in Jerusalem. Then Yeshua, son of Zadok, Yozadok, his fellow Kohanim, Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and his associates began to build the altar of the God of Israel in order to offer burnt offerings. And on it, as written in the Torah of Moses, the man of God, they set up the altar on its fixed resting place, despite their fear of the peoples of the lands, and they offered burnt offerings on it to Adonai, both the morning and the evening sacrifices. They also kept the Feast of Sukkot, as it is written, and offered the prescribed number of daily burnt offerings according to the requirement for each day. After that, they presented the burnt offerings, the new moon sacrifices, and the sacrifices for all the sacred Moedim of Adonai, as well as the freewill offerings brought to Adonai. From the first day of the seventh month, they began to offer burnt offerings to Adonai through the foundation of the temple of Adonai, though the foundation of the temple of Adonai had not been laid. So they gave money to the stonemasons and carpenters and food, beverages, and oil to the Sidonians and the Tyrians to bring cedar trees by sea from Lebanon to Joppa, as authorized by King Cyrus of Persia. In the second month of the second year, after they had come to the house of God in Jerusalem, Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, Yeshua, son of Yeshua, son of Jozadak, and the rest of their brothers, the Kohanim, the Levites, and all who returned from captivity to Jerusalem, began the work. They appointed the Levites from 20 years of age and older to supervise the work on the house of Adonai. Then Yeshua, his sons, and his brothers, Kadmiel and his sons, the sons of Judah, stood together to supervise those working in the house of God, along with the sons of Henadad, their sons, and their brothers, the Levites. When the builders had laid the foundation of the temple of Adonai, the Kohanim arrayed in their vestments and with clarions, and the Levites, son of Asaph, with cymbals, were stationed to praise Adonai as prescribed by King David of Israel. With praise and thanksgiving, they sang to Adonai, for he is good, for his mercy upon Israel endures forever. Then all the people gave a great shout of praise to Adonai because the foundation of the house of Adonai had been laid. But many of the Kohanim, Levites, and patriarchal leaders, older men who had seen the former house, wept loudly at the sight of the founding of this house, while many shouted for joy. People could not distinguish the sound of the shouts of joy from the sound of the people's weeping, for the people were shouting so loudly that the sound was heard far away.
Ezra chapter 4. When the enemies of Judah and Benjamin heard that the returned exile were building a temple for Adonai, the God of Israel, they approached Zerubbabel and the leading patriarchs and said to them, "Let us build with you, for like you, we seek your God and have been sacrificing to him since the days of Esarhaddon, king of Assyria, who brought us here." But Zerubbabel Yeshua, and the rest of the prominent patriarchs of Israel said to them, "It is not for you and us to build a house for our God, but we alone will build it for Adonai, the God of Israel, just as Cyrus, king of Persia, has commanded us." Then the people of the land began discouraging the people of Judah and making them afraid to build. They bribed advisors in order to thwart their plans and all the days of King Cyrus of Persia and until the reign of Darius, king of Persia. During the reign of Ahasuerus, at the beginning of his reign, they wrote an accusation against the inhabitants of Judah and Jerusalem. Also during the days of Artaxerxes, Bishlam, Mithredath, Dabil, and the rest of his associates wrote to Ahasuerus, king of Persia. The letter was written in Aramaic and translated. Rehum, the commander of the Shimshai, the scribe, wrote a letter concerning Jerusalem to King Artaxerxes as follows. From Rehum, the commander, Shimshai, the scribe, and the rest of their associates, the judges and the officials, the magistrates and the governors over the Erechites, the Babylonians, the people of Susa, that is, the Elamites, and the rest of the peoples whom the great and noble Ashurbanipal deported and settled in the city of Samaria, and the rest of Trans-Euphrates. Now this is a copy of the letter they sent to him, to Ahasuerus, the king, from your servants, the men of Trans-Euphrates. Now let it be known to the king that the Jews who came up to us from you have gone to Jerusalem and are building the rebellious and wicked city. They're completing the walls and repairing the foundations. Furthermore, let it be known to the king that if this city is rebuilt and its walls are completed, no more tribute, taxes, or duty will be paid, and the royal revenue will suffer. Now, since we eat the salt of the palace, and it is not proper for us to see the king dishonored, we are sending this message to inform the king so that a search may be made in the book of records of your fathers, and you will discover in the records and know that this city is a rebellious city, harmful to kings and provinces, inciting internal revolts from ancient times. That is why this city was destroyed. We are informing the king that if the city is rebuilt and its walls completed, you will no longer have any possession in Trans-Euphrates. The king sent this reply to Rehum, the commander, Shimshai, the scribe, and the rest of their associates who dwell in Samaria and the others in Trans-Euphrates. Shalom, the letter that you sent to us has been translated and read in my presence. At my order, a search was made, and it was found that this city has from the earliest times revolted against kings, and the rebellion and sedition continually occur in it. Mighty kings have ruled over Jerusalem, governing all the Trans-Euphrates, and tribute taxes and duty were paid to them. So now, issue a decree to stop these men. This city is not to be rebuilt until I issue a decree. Be careful not to be negligent in this matter. Why should damage increase to the detriment of the kings? Then, as soon as the copy of the letter from King Ahasuerus was read, in the presence of Rehum, Shimshai, the scribe, and their associates, they hurried off to the Jews in Jerusalem, and by force and power compelled them to stop. Thus the work on the house of God in Israel, in Jerusalem, ceased. It remained at a standstill until the second year of the reign of Darius, king of Persia.
People said that King David, the house of King David, was just a small local regional kingdom. That's what the historians say. That's what they say when they look back at the little tiny kingdom of Israel, which was once the northern tribes and the southern tribes. What is the words of the king? King Artaxerxes says, "Mighty kings have ruled over Jerusalem, governing all the Trans-Euphrates, and tribute, taxes, and duty were paid to them." You see, it wasn't, Israel was not a tiny little kingdom, tribal kingdom in the middle of the region that was just, you know, happy raising their sheep and their cows. No. They were mighty kings who ruled over Jerusalem, and they governed all the Trans-Euphrates, everything on the other side of the Euphrates. And they required tribute and taxes and duty were paid to them. As a matter of fact, it is their tribute, the taxes, and the duty that ended up causing the northern tribes to break with Solomon, because they felt like, and if you go back and read the stories, read the narratives, you'll see that they came to the son of the king, and they said to him, relieve our taxes, and we will serve you. And he went, the young man went and consulted with his companions, and they came back and said, no, we're going to double the taxes. And at that point is when the northern kingdom split from the southern kingdom. So I point this out to you because these are official correspondences to the kings of Persia, documented, which clearly state that, yes, Israel was not a tiny little regional power with sheep and cows on the hill. No, they ruled everything in the Trans-Euphrates, or what we would call today all of Israel, as far north as Tyre, and all the way down to the border of Egypt, pretty much as they are today. All right, this is a great book. We're going to continue with this. I hope you saw the nuances. As a matter of fact, I encourage you between now and next week to go back and reread at least chapter one and then chapter three and chapter four. I know they're a long list. We will read through that quickly and we'll move on to the more meatier sections of the scripture. Thank you all for coming. I look forward to seeing you all next week. Have a wonderful week. Take care. Thank you for joining us on our journey through the books of Ezra and Nehemiah. Join us each week as we bring the life of Judah as the people emerge from captivity. In the words of Malachi, then those who revere Adonai spoke with each other, and Adonai took notice and heard, and a scroll of remembrance was written before him for those who revere Adonai, even those who esteemed his name. So they shall be mine, says Adonai Sabaoth, in the day I will make my own special possession. So I will spare them as one spares his son serving him. Malachi 3:16-17.